Welcome into the Chris Collinsworth podcast on this fine Tuesday afternoon after a rather exciting night of Monday Night Football this weekend. It was unbelievable. One of the biggest games of the year, the Buffalo Bills and New England Patriots going at it last night, and a grand total of three passes thrown by Mac Jones and the Patriots, and they came out of there with a win. And winds being the big story of that night, gusts up to sort of 50 miles an hour and above, and it was just a wild one. And to discuss that and so many other things, we have Deonte Lee, who is struggling with the weather out in San Diego, California, and just doing the best that he can to survive. And Seth Galina, who is, I think, sunbathing in Montreal, Canada at this point. Guys, how you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, this is probably the most amount of layers I'll wear all year. I'm just trying to brave the elements.
Wear them out, man. Come on, wear them out. Come on.
I can relate to what the people in Buffalo were going through last night.
No, you can't.
On my own level, everything's relative.
No. Look, as someone from the most northern person here, you cannot. I refuse to allow you, and especially since Buffalo is basically Canada, I refuse to allow you to say those words to me. As it just snowed yesterday here.
The worst, one of the worst ones that I had this year. And I always screw up stuff. I mean, you can't let me talk for 3 hours on national television without screwing stuff up. But I'd never been to Niagara Falls. And so our driver was there, and I had like an hour in the middle of the day on a Saturday. And I was like, the last time I was in Buffalo to do a game, which was forever ago before this, and I was with Tom Hammond, and we passed Niagara Falls on the way back from something. And he goes, we should just go in there and go see. And I was like, nah, I'm tired. I want to go see. I said, I've come to Buffalo like every other week. I'll do it next time. Well, then it was like 10 years and I hadn't seen it. So my next trip to Buffalo, I was going to go to Niagara Falls. So I make our driver drive us up there to Niagara Falls, and it's spectacular. If you've never been there, you should absolutely go. And so I'm just looking around, and, you know, you're having a good time, and there's kind of a city across the way over there. And I go, oh, what's that? And he goes, oh, it's Toronto. And I go, really? And it's, you know, they have a big tower over there and some different things. So they take a shot. They take a shot of Niagara Falls during the game. And I go, oh, I went up there. It was beautiful. It was really incredible to see Toronto right across the way. And poor Mike Tirico, who's my partner, who lives in Detroit, who knows all thing about Canada, or lives in Michigan. And he goes, yeah, if you look really hard, you might be able to see it about 200 miles away. And I mean, I took more abuse that entire week. It was pathetic. I was so stupid. I wanted to kill our driver, but whatever. Can't blame him. Can't blame him. So, Seth, give me a little breakdown. That had to be some good old fun Canadian style football out there watching that Monday night game last night. And it was a huge game. You know, what is it? 7 in a row now for the Patriots. And they clearly now are the front runner to go to the Super Bowl. Again, I've done the Super Bowl. I've called the game 4 times. The damn Patriots have been in it every single time, and it looks like they're going to make it 5 in a row. It's amazing.
Well, I think the fun thing is they're doing it in such a different way than from the times that you probably saw them in the Super Bowl, right? You know, they're not spread anymore. They don't throw the ball and think. I mean, they're certainly think and dunk a bit, but they put a fullback on the field. They run power. They run counter. They pull guards. They mash you on the inside. And I think that was really the big thing that I saw when I rewatched the game, is like their offensive line, even though Buffalo put 100 guys near the line of scrimmage because they knew there was no pass threat, the Patriots offensive line won almost every single one-on-one. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have some success running the football. Now, obviously, look, they only scored 14 points. They only scored, you know, basically one touchdown, I believe. So it's not like they did a great job, but they did enough. And it's really fun to watch a team that wants to get into these heavier personnel groupings and run a pretty diverse run game, power, counter, G lead, trap, draw, all that stuff, and have some success.
Yeah, it wasn't too pleasant in the game, in the press conference afterwards. They had Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, the two safeties for Buffalo, up getting interviewed. And one of the questions is, only the fine people of the media could put, said, "Are you embarrassed by your run defense?" Something along those lines. And those two guys were ready to come over the top rope and in wrestling parlance there to begin to take them on. It's like, embarrassed. They got 14 points on us. They broke one long run and didn't have another touchdown other than that. But you can tell that the game plan more and more as we go around, Deontay, is this: we don't care how many rushing yards you have. We're not going to let you beat us with the passing game. And we saw that again in that game last night. The Buffalo Bills are one of those teams that if you are willing to just keep pounding the ball, that's, they're going to give up some yards.
And honestly, the more I was watching that game, the more it just made me think about the way that narratives have been shaped in this sport over the last few years, and especially like the last 2 years or so, you know, as we kind of have these conversations about how the offenses are more spread out than ever and teams are playing with more too high safeties than ever. And then you look at a team like the Patriots, and, you know, I make the joke all the time that Bill Belichick is trying to drag this sport back to 1989 as quickly as he can. And you just see the way that they play, and it's just such a shock, you know, aesthetically, playing with, you know, 22 personnel, two backs and two tight ends, all the power, all the ISO, all the lead. I mean, some of this stuff, you know, was probably day one install when you were playing, Chris, you know, and to see a lot of this stuff come back around now and be so prevalent for them and to be as successful as they were, that was the thing that I kind of walked away from the most. And it's been this way for the last 2 months, as you said, on this win streak. That ability to play physically, you know, to put the game in a phone booth when everybody wants to get as many wide receivers on the field and run all these RPOs and throw screens out on the perimeter. I think that there is something to be said for just having a different style of play. You know, we talk about it all the time at the college level, right? Preparing for like a triple option team or preparing for a team that runs with their quarterback all the time. That's a big difference in what you're going to see from the typical NFL team. And I'm sure that there is a lot to that for a lot of these coaches preparing for the Patriots, saying, man, what they're doing, that's usually like a package for a team. It's not necessarily the entire offense. And I think that they've been able to find a lot of success, and it's helped protect and develop Mac Jones along the way. And that's why I think they've been the most successful offensively.
Yeah, it's like watching college teams, great college teams, play one of the academies, you know, or triple option, and they can make you look so bad, you know, on occasion, because you're just not used to seeing it. But I love it when the phrase, the damn Patriots, starts coming around again, because it was there for two decades, and somehow, some way, they just always seem to find a way to take your weakness and their strength and match them up one-on-one. The conditions were absolutely perfect. They had to feel like they had such a huge advantage in the game because of the matchup of the quarterbacks, and to have Josh Allen and that big strong arm be able to throw the ball in both directions, whereas Mac Jones, you felt like he was only going to get to throw the ball when they were with the win. But they do it again. You know, Bill Belichick, give him credit. I don't think Sean McDermott wanted to come out and say that in that press conference either. But to throw it three times in the National Football League and win a game on the road in their place with their kind of conditions is an amazing tribute to that football team. It really is. It was impressive, and they are the team to beat right now. There is no question about that. There's some other interesting things going on around the league. So we did the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday night. And Denver really was no match for them. But once again, Patrick Mahomes wins the football game. They've won five in a row. Case closed. Their defense is playing great. Their offense is good enough. Nothing more really needs to be said. But all I've been hearing about was how this cover two defense and the shell coverages are really what beats Patrick Mahomes. That really wasn't what the Broncos were doing, or that is it what they've been doing? You know, they're sort of the king of that look and the disguise and all that, but they played a ton of single high safety in that game. And yet Patrick Mahomes, and some windy conditions, let's just say that. I mean, it was one of those kind of nights there too, But is there something more to what's going on with these defenses now shutting down Patrick Mahomes?
Oh, we talked exactly about this yesterday on our podcast, Too High Podcast. That you said it exactly. We thought that Denver was going to come out and show too high safeties, which they did, and then play some sort of too high safety coverage, whether it was cover two or quarters or cover six and all these crazy things. But what they ended up doing was spinning down, spinning that one safety down and playing on cover one, playing on a man coverage. And they still can't do anything, Kansas City, on offense. And it's like, we're waiting for it to something to happen. I do think we have 3 years of elite Patrick Mahomes play. So I do think he can get back to that because he is that good, but we're still waiting for that second, you know, shoe to drop and him complete these balls in areas of the field that he probably should complete them in underneath, you know, under 15 yards. He's not throwing the ball very well. Like you said, the wind might've been a factor in that one, but it's not very good right now. And that scares me a lot.
You know, I brought up the point in the game just because I love making everybody mad at me eventually. But, you know, and I was talking about because he was doing a lot of those drop down angles and sidearm deliveries. And you combine that with the wind and the different things that were going on. And honestly, I thought Aaron Rodgers did this for a little while, too, that they can kind of fall in love with all that arm angle stuff. And it looks great on national television. But sometimes there are just layups out there. Sometimes there are just easy throws to be made. And when you layer in winter type conditions, wind, rain, snow, whatever it might be, is that just making it too hard? You know, the degree of difficulty is hard enough in a game like that without dropping down. And then I was hearing the guys on the broadcast last night saying, that Josh Allen kind of likes throwing it three quarters in some of those conditions just because he can control the ball a little bit better. But it just doesn't seem logical to me. To me, it's like you've been throwing the ball the same way over and over and over for your entire life. You know, why are they making it harder on themselves when they don't always have to?
Yeah, I think the thing with Josh Allen last night was I think it was more about like the cold conditions and the wind and all that stuff, because I think I understood what Brian Gracie was saying, where you want to cup the ball more because you're afraid if you hold it, like he was saying with the C, then the ball can, you know, you don't really feel your fingertips. Maybe the ball can lose grip on you. So you kind of want to cup it a bit more in that U shape. But I don't think that was a problem really in the, like you said, it was windy. I mean, you were there in Denver for that game, or sorry, in Kansas City for that game. So I'm not really sure. I do think his accuracy on these underneath throws has been poor. I mean, there's no other thing to say it. I don't know if it's the sidearm stuff yet. I'm afraid to say that. And then he just figures it out because he's Patrick Mahomes. But I do think there's something to be said about the timing on some of these throws and maybe how they rise in the air, you know, a sidearm throw. Remember these like softball pitchers with the rising fastballs. I don't know. Maybe it's tougher to catch. And that's why, I mean, I don't think this is true, but maybe that's why he's having all these dropped passes that become interceptions. I think, you know, when I watch this offense, I look at it and I'm like, all this, hey, Travis Kelce, find some space 10 yards deep and go work and run a whip route and spin around and find a space on the field. That's all good when everything's clicking on all cylinders. And then when you watch them try and do that and Mahomes is kind of taking off from the pocket because the tackle play isn't as good, it's like, what are they doing? Like, they're not very precise. They've never been precise, but they were able to hit these explosive plays throughout the last 3 years that it was like, it didn't matter. Because if you played single high safety and you played cover three and Tyreek Hill was, you know, coming across the field, you had no choice. You had no chance against them. Now that they need to be a little more precise, the way teams are playing it against them, they're not able to. And that's kind of scary going forward.
Yeah, it had, you know, they've got Creed Humphrey now playing center. They've got Trey Smith. Orlando Brown's been playing better. Joe Tooney's, you know, getting the cast off. He's doing well. They'll get Lucas Niang back. So their running game or an offensive line play is improved over what it was a year ago, which makes the whole thing a little harder to explain, but again, I say the same thing, that they're so much better on defense right now that it's almost like, I don't care. And I felt like for the first time in forever that Andy Reid went, yeah, I'll punt the ball here. I'm going to play to my defense. I don't need to do anything. And he's right. When Chris Jones got paired with the return of Frank Clark, Melvin Ingram came over in the deal. They allowed Chris Jones to go back inside and play where he should have been playing all along. Nick Bolton, Willie Gay, two young players at linebacker. And these cornerbacks are playing better than they have. So, I mean, who knows? But if you'd have told me 4 or 5 games into this season, we'd be talking about the Chiefs on a 5-game winning streak because of their defense. Their defense was the worst in football for the first 5 games. You know, you'd have said you're out of your mind, and yet here we are, and their offense is the one that's struggling right now.
I think, you know, and I think there is something to be said for Steve Spagnuolo, their defensive coordinator, maybe just needing 2 months to figure out exactly what this defense was. You know, trying to cycle in some younger guys. And one thing that we know about him, you know, over his time as a defensive coordinator is a lot of his best success is packages, right? He has these exotic pressure packages. He has guys that he likes to move around with L'Jarius Sneed and Tyrann Mathieu, and they do different things in different spots. Well, what that means is that everybody else who's around these types of players has to be able to execute at a high level. And if there's a gap or if there's a hole in certain places, it becomes easy to exploit. So to your point, getting their edge pass rushers together, just having edge players that doesn't demand that, you know, Chris Jones basically be their best edge rusher, I think has done a lot for them, because their run defense is basically all built on the fact that nobody can block Chris Jones one-on-one inside. So that has helped them with fitting the run. Obviously bringing in new linebackers, because they play with such light bodies, I think around their linebacking core, it does put a lot of strain on them to be able to fit the run in different situations. And I think that that's improved a lot. And then a lot of that is just them being able to create havoc. Like one of the things that I was looking at early in the year when they were playing poorly is some of the ways that they were busting coverages and giving up explosive plays, that's happened over Spags' tenure as a defensive coordinator. The thing that wasn't happening that was really concerning was they weren't creating plays in the backfield. That to me has been the identity of this defense for the entire time Spags has been there. It's getting those TFLs. You think about that AFC Championship game against the Buffalo Bills, and a lot of that was creating turnovers. You get sacks. You create pressure. All of those things are the hallmark of what this defense is supposed to look like at its best, and they're getting closer to that. And I think the more that they're able to build on that, you know, to the point about how dangerous the Patriots are going to be. And I think I try to fight this in my head as much as possible. You try to find other teams that can maybe contend, but the way that this defense has been building itself as well, I feel like we're staring at the thing that we probably should always expect, which is that Bill Belichick and the best quarterback in the conference are the two teams that are probably going to meet each other in the AFC Championship game. And it seems like that's where we're headed now that that defense has improved.
It does feel like that. It really does. Tyrann Mathieu, we know what he can do, but I even saw him playing some deep center field now because They're comfortable with Juan Thornhill in some different roles. But probably the thing that the Chiefs talked about the most was the improved play at the cornerback position. Charvarius Ward, big interception in the game last week. L'Jarius Sneed, they really fell into him being a slot player because he had no real history of that, but he's become such a physical presence, good blitzer on the outside. And Rashad Fenton has been making great plays. He didn't play in the game the other night, but they've got Mike Hughes and they've got DeAndre Baker, who both played well enough in that game. So now when you start to think about what do you need most going into the playoffs, most people would say, and I think the Patriots would say too, I want as many people in my secondary as I can find. I can get creative on the front end, but give me a good solid secondary. And moving Daniel Sorensen out of the third safety look and making him more of a dime linebacker, get him out of space and some deep coverage where he was getting burned earlier in the year, I think makes a lot of sense. You want a chance to win the ultimate game day feast, whether it's football success or financial savvy? Winning starts with asking us questions. That's right. Would you like to know what it's like behind the scenes with Al Michaels on Sunday Night Football? Happy to answer that. How about a need to know for your financial future? We can do that too. And now you can ask about either or both. Every football or financial question you ask earns you a chance to win a catered party for February's big game, and we all know what that is. PFF will throw a party worth up to $2,500 for the big game in February for up to 25 guests. It's going to be amazing, and the winner can choose whatever food they want. So if all you want is nachos, we can get you a bunch of those. This week's question comes from James in Chicago. What is the greatest game you have ever been on the call for? So announced. I think it was the Super Bowl in which Seattle and New England played. It looked like Seattle was getting ready to go in for the game-winning touchdown. They had just run the ball with Marshawn Lynch down to the one-yard line. Second down, 30 seconds to go in the game, something like that. And instead of just running it all on in, which I thought maybe New England might have even just let them go in so Tom Brady would have a chance. Coming back the other way, they decide to throw the pass. Russell Wilson gets intercepted by Malcolm Butler, and the place is insane. And then I'm sitting there trying to go, oh my goodness, what am I going to say here in this sort of historic moment? And honestly, all I could think of was to say was exactly what I was thinking at the time was, what are they doing making that call? You know, why did they make that call? And I kind of just said it a couple of times. And, you know, so people in Seattle didn't like it. Their coaches didn't like it. Everybody got mad. But that was really the only thing. I mean, I could see it being a rollout pass with Russell Wilson. I could see it being a run with Marshawn Lynch. The drop back quick pass with a 6-foot quarterback over all those big goal line defenders. I never saw it. So anyway, that was the most fun, exciting moment I think we were ever a part of. So if you want to be a part of the festivities here, you can submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/askchris. One more time, that is westernsouthern.com/askchris. And if you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, with Western and Southern, you can rest assured on game day. Football fans, sure, we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game. But with the no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be there once a single point is scored. New customers bet just one on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's just that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, and all with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF and bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code PFF. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. New customer, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Right now, you can get 25% off any PFF subscription if you use code Collinsworth. There you go, Collinsworth. Grades and data are live for every single player who logged a snap last week. And what do you get with a PFF subscription? All of PFF's locked article content. Bango, you get that. PFF's NFL and college football betting dashboards, you get that. Our grade-powered projections, cover probabilities, and betting values, you get that. 0 to 100 grades on every single player, including the top rookies on every team, you're going to get that. Player prop tool, which shows plus minus values for every NFL prop. So you probably make billions and billions of dollars and so much more. And as always, please support the podcast. Use promo code Collinsworth for 25% off any sub. We thank you. Let's go on to one of the most bizarre games I watched in a long time when Cincinnati and the Chargers, I won't call them San Diego, the LA Chargers went at it. And of course, the famous freeze ball game that I played in, I was there when I woke up to my clock radio that day, and it said, ladies and gentlemen, it's 9 below zero outside. The wind's blowing 35 miles an hour, which makes for a wind chill of 59 below zero. Whatever you do, don't let your dog outside today. This dog ain't going anywhere. I'm ready to stay right here in bed. It was unbelievable. People ask me about that game all the time. And I say, if you can imagine taking a sledgehammer to a mirror, that's what it felt like when I got hit for the first time in that game. I mean, I felt like I fell on the ground in a million different pieces. It was insane. A little bit better day in Cincinnati this time around when the Chargers and the Bengals went at it. But Chargers jump out, right? 24-0, piece of cake. This game's blowout. Bengals come all the way back, 24-22, miss a two-point conversion. And Ja'Marr Chase turns around and hands the defensive back the ball on one that would have been a walk-in touchdown. Joe Mixon, without even getting hit, hands the ball to somebody who runs it in for a touchdown. It was the damnedest game I ever saw. It was just crazy. Did we learn anything out of it, especially other than Joe Burrow is a really tough guy who, once again, he bangs up his pinky finger and plays through it and still gives him a chance to win the game. But what's the takeaway of that game?
Can I ask you something before we get on to this game? Did you wear gloves in that ice bowl?
Is the only time I wore gloves until the Super Bowl that year. Cause I had never, I didn't know how to, and the gloves weren't that good back then, but in that game, they had these things called like scuba gloves that had suction cups on them. But it was the only way you could move your hands. I mean, I'm telling you, it was insane. It was insane. It was ridiculous. They had Bob Costas. I think that was a game that he was announcing the game, and he had a heater put so close to him to try and stay warm that his pants caught on fire. I mean, it's like a legendary, the river froze over. It was, the whole thing was insane.
Do you think I was a 16-year-old crying about going to practice when it was like 41 degrees outside? I am as California soft as it gets.
have you gotten, I don't want to derail this, but have you gotten a chance to wear these like modern receiver gloves and stuff that you, the access to this type of equipment that you didn't have? Like, how do you think your career, your catching ability would have changed with these type of the gloves that me and Deontay grew up wearing?
I think it would have been completely different. The other part of it was that they used to make them play with the footballs right out of the box. And these things were shiny and slippery. Literally, they took it out of the plastic and put it in play on the field. Now these guys spend the entire week having a staff scruff them up and make it better, you know, the whole thing. But maybe the biggest, even bigger than the gloves and being able to fix the balls, is they can't hit you anymore. They can't hit you under the chin anymore. So all these guys that are going over the middle now know they can't get hit in the head. Well, that's like getting a rebound. Anybody can catch a ball like that. When you weren't sure if you were going to the hospital every time you went over the middle of the field, I mean, I had so many sets of stitches in my chin over my career. It was ridiculous that they would just aim for you right there until my cousin, who was a fullback who played at Eastern Kentucky, said, "How stupid are you?" And I go, "Well, pretty stupid. Why? Why do you ask?" Because have you ever heard of a padded chin strap? They got them now. You won't get your chin split open. And I wore one of those. It never happened again. So there you go. But yeah, I think it is so much easier to catch the football now than what it was. They almost assume the catch now. They almost don't even think about making the catch because it takes a lot for the ball to not stick in your hands on these things. And probably the thing that I see as a receiver is these guys are not very good at the underhand catch, which we used to all make a lot of because it was an easier catch than trying to make it stick with your hands, right? That was hard to do. And you also have to snap your head down so fast to get a ball that is on one of those underhand catches. They drop a lot of those because they're looking up or whatever. But would I have liked to play just a half an hour's worth in today's game, I would have liked to have given it a go. You know, the other part of it was I never caught an end zone fade touchdown. You know, we never threw one of those. We never had any bunches or pick plays inside to be able to take advantage of the bump and run and all that. I mean, all those back shoulder throws, nobody ever thought of that, you know? So there's so many things in the game today that you go, God, that would have been great to have a chance to do some of those things.
You guys just lined up and played football. That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, what did I probably averaged 15 and a half yards per catch. And what are the average now? 10. I mean, everything's a quick throw, a wide receiver screen. That's what it is.
I was going to say, yeah, Chris had a reputation as a speed guy. Could you imagine if you got him on RPO slant against man coverage?
Don't even run. You know, all I do is show these guys, they start popping off about what great deep threats are. Yeah. How many yards per catch you average? Oh, 12. I go, yeah, I average 15. Shut up.
And that's before the illegal contact rules too. So,
you know, all that stuff, it makes the game way better. Honestly, I don't know how a quarterback ever lived through a season. I mean, I can remember Kenny Anderson having his head turned around. It looked like, you know, the Exorcist or something. Like his helmet was backwards. A guy from the Pittsburgh Steelers grabbed him. And they had a picture the next day in the newspaper, and literally his face mask was dead backwards, going backwards. I mean, it's just, they were trying to kill those guys and trying to kill us too. So it was interesting though. It was fun. We had a good time playing. So
were you ever lined up more tighter? I mean, obviously you didn't play tight end, but you're seeing all these guys, you know, Chris Godwin, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, some other receivers who really get dirty inside, you know, the motion. You see the Bucks do this all the time. They motion Godwin in, they run their, you know, what we call their duo run, and he gets really dirty. Was that part of your game as well? Or you were just a split out X receiver? Don't come near me with the football. I'm just running go routes.
No, we definitely did a little bit. We ran some option routes inside, but we never ran the deep overs across cover one that they run today. We never got a chance to do that. I mean, all this stuff is brilliant stuff that's evolved over the years and been copycatted by every team. But now we never did any of that. And really, we had what was considered the cutting edge offense at the time was Sam Weich, and Lindy Infante was great. In my rookie year, we go to the Super Bowl both of those years. All right, we had two quarterbacks that were both MVPs. So we were right on, you know, we're right on the cutting edge. And I look back at it and I go, God, how stupid were we? We didn't do anything. It's like, I should have thought of that. How did I not think of some of this stuff? So crazy. So tell me about Justin Herbert. Are we all in? Can either one of these teams be in contention? Could either one of these teams play with the Bills, Chiefs, Patriots coming down the stretch? Or are we looking at a team like the Indianapolis Colts who can pound the football in any kind of weather, despite being a dome team, as being maybe that X factor team that comes out of nowhere?
I think for me, if I had to rank the three, I probably lean closest to the Colts because of their style of play. Similarly to what we were talking about with the Patriots being that change of pace type of team. I obviously still have some questions about what Carson Wentz looks like in those high stakes, high leverage situations. But I think the way that they've been able to stop the run, which I think has been maybe their biggest find, almost more so than what they've been able to develop in their run game. The fact that they can stop the run defensively, they can control the clock on the offensive end. And when they're able to mitigate those turnovers from Wentz and some of those negative plays, they look to be as dangerous a team in the NFL. I mean, they were 30 seconds away from beating the Buccaneers, which was probably a team that you can make a strong argument will be the NFC representative in the Super Bowl. So I think very highly of them. I do think when you're talking about like a team like the Chargers or a team like the Bengals, they're probably right in that conversation, maybe just, you know, a hair behind. And I say that because, you know, we talk about teams getting hot at the right time all the time. And they have the two quarterbacks, I think, the two young quarterbacks that are probably most capable of getting hot and having that, you know, 28 for 34 game where they throw for 320 yards and three touchdowns, right? Like we see stuff like that happen all the time as these guys break out from household, you know, from non-household names to superstars, and they both have the capability to do so. I do have concerns about both teams defensively that kind of give me some hangups, But I do think in that game that we saw, being as back and forth as it was, is kind of evidence of what I'm mentioning, which is that they can both be as explosive as any team in the NFL, almost on moment's notice. And that to me is really intriguing when we talk about their playoff picture.
And so I probably, if we're talking about those three teams, I'll probably say the Chargers, just because I think in a one game scenario, Herbert is the guy who can be the best player on the field. So you probably want to take him. But yeah, I agree. Like, both these teams can just get explosive in a moment's notice. Obviously Herbert with his arm talent, and Burrow, it's just he's got ice water in his veins, and he throws the ball down the field. He doesn't have the best arm. He doesn't have the biggest arm, but he throws nine routes. He throws down the field. He trusts his receivers to go and make plays for him, which is really fun to watch. So yeah, I would definitely say the Chargers number one, and then the Bengals. And the Colts are interesting because, you know, if we're just talking quarterback play, like you said, Deontay, like, what are you going to get from Carson Wentz on a week-to-week basis? That's obviously the issue. Now, I will say he has played so much better than I think anyone would have thought. Apparently, Frank Reich is the quarterback whisperer. So I'm excited to see them going forward, and they run a great offense. Reich does a good job of just, like, I think, sequencing plays together and putting together this whole situation. Obviously the offensive line has been really good and Taylor's been great. So I think any of those three teams can give you a battle, but I think in a one game situation, Herbert's something different. I think
he's got something going on. You know, so I'm getting ready for the Green Bay game against Chicago this week. And one of the things I didn't really realize was that, you know, just how many key people this team had out, right? I mean, David Bakhtiari looks like he's on the brink of coming back. Jair Alexander looks like he's on the brink of coming back. Devondre Campbell should be back at any time. Josh Myers, their center, if he comes back from that knee injury as well. So this is a team that may well have Za'Darius Smith. I didn't even talk about Za'Darius Smith, who's probably, you know, along with Jair Alexander, probably their best player on defense. If all of a sudden all these guys, and assuming Aaron Rodgers' toe doesn't fall off, if all these guys come back for this stretch run, and they've already got a win over Arizona, so assuming Arizona stumbles somewhere and they just tie, and Green Bay's the top seed going into the playoffs, and they get all those guys back, you know, you kind of can make a pretty strong case that they are the favorites to win the Super Bowl this year.
For me, I would pick them right now. Now, I will say, like, the way Tom Brady has played the last 3 weeks, it's like looking pretty good. But yeah, I love watching the Packers offense. Me and Deontay have talked about this a lot. Like, if we were running an offense, it's so funny to think about it this way, but if we were running an offense at the high school level, we would literally just copy paste what they do, because it is a very simple offense, and they let Aaron Rodgers be Aaron Rodgers. You know, they throw all these RPOs, throw all these bubbles to Devontae, let the one of the best players in football catch the ball behind the line of scrimmage, let him do what he wants. And the passing game is really simple. Like, the downfield stuff, they don't run a ton of stuff. They do different formations to make it look like they're doing different stuff, but not a lot of different stuff there. Inside zone from the shotgun, you know, it's all the same. It's like a high school kind of collegiate type of offense. But when you put Devontae Adams and you put Aaron Rodgers in it, it is as good as you can get. And if they get these guys back healthy, I mean, to me, they'd be my pick right now to win the whole thing.
I mean, and they've grown so much in balancing out their attack offensively. And that, to me, has been the reason why I think they are serious contenders in a way that I probably would not have even said last year, in spite of the fact that they were a 13-win team. Their growth in their running game, I think, has been a nice revelation for them. You know, Aaron Jones has always been a good running back. I think that they have just found ways to allow him to create offense for them in a way that allows, on the other end, Aaron Rodgers to push the ball further downfield. Because one of the things that I would take issue with over the last few years was there was so much force feeding for, like, a Devontae Adams on these bubble screens, on these hitches. They were trying to find extensions of their running game, I think, a little bit too often, and maybe to the detriment of the kind of talent that Devontae Adams was. This year, I think you're seeing him a lot more down the field. You're seeing Aaron Rodgers, honestly, take more shots down the field, and it's added another layer to their attack. And then on the other end of the ball, and maybe their biggest growth is, I can't imagine a bigger philosophical shift in the way that you approach a 3-4 between Mike Pettine and Joe Barry and the way that they use bodies, right? Like Mike Pettine's issue, and we saw this, you know, year after year after year, them being in the playoffs, was they play up against a team that plays with bigger bodies, that plays more physical brands of football, and they've got all these DBs on the field, right? Like that San Francisco NFC Championship game kind of stands out, like as that death knell for Mike Pettine in his time at Green Bay, right? And they're just running toss and outside zone, and they're just killing them on the edge because they didn't have big enough bodies to handle it. And then I look at how they play now when they're healthy, and you've got Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary and Za'Darius Smith and Devondre Campbell, and they've got these huge bodies between the tackles. They've got these huge bodies out on the edge, and that's done a lot for them as a defense that wants to play more of that too high stuff. And Seth and I talk about this all the time, and the way that you approach defense being dictated by the kind of bodies that you have. And the fact that they have those bodies to be able to control the edge, they've been able to get great interior pressure with their big bodies. That to me has been a big find for them as well. And that's allowed them, I think, to protect their corners with some of these too high coverages, which now is really paying their dividends when they're hurt, right? Like you're able to see a guy like Eric Stokes continue to grow. You know, if you were to tell me that a non-premier corner that was drafted will basically be on an island by himself because their true number one corner was hurt, and he's been able to survive over this streak of time while they're waiting for guys to get healthy, I think that that's a testament to the way that Joe Barry has been able to approach this defense and protect the guys that need protecting and using those big bodies to stop the run. And they've been able to have a great mix of playing coverages, playing man, playing zone, getting after the quarterback without necessarily needing the blitz. And for that reason, like I said, I mean, there are a lot of teams in the NFL you can make a case could represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, but they are right there. And I don't think you can make a legitimate argument for why you wouldn't believe that they can be a Super Bowl team.
I think these bigger body defensive ends that you talked about, that is the future of defensive line play, or even I think more specifically like edge rushers, like defensive ends. Because as we get to more of this too high safety stuff where you don't have that, you know, whether it's a third linebacker or the safety coming down in the box to stop the run, well, you need players that can take up two gaps or can control an offensive tackle or something. And the Packers are a great example of that. Like, hey, we have big bodies. Like, if we're going to play with two high safeties, we're going to have to control two gaps. So we can't have these like speedy, twitchy edge rushers as much. We need bigger bodies. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, me and Deontay, about the Saints. The Saints, like the season that's kind of gone off the rails a bit, but the Saints defense is great. And they've always had this type of player in Cameron Jordan, who now, like, Cameron Jordan's don't fall off trees very often, but he is a bigger body player who can always stop the run. And they've kind of looked for that. And Marcus Davenport is a bigger body player who can get after the passer as well. And I think those are the type of bodies, especially on the defensive line, that you're going to start seeing a lot more of, because you kind of don't have a choice. Like, you can't, like, you got to be able to control offensive linemen now in the run game if you're a defensive end.
You know, the Patriots have done that with their tackles forever. Those, you know, just two gapping, you know, hey, we're going to, you go ahead and try and run it, but we spent a lot of draft capital, put these two monsters inside here, and good luck running it between the tackles. And now they're forcing you into throwing and all that. All right, before I let you guys out of here, I got to hear your take on the college football playoffs. How about my Cincinnati Bearcats, baby? They're going down to Texas Stadium, AT&T Stadium, whatever the hell that thing's called now, and going to take on the Alabama Crimson Tide. And we talked about people with their damn Patriots are right back in it again. The damn Alabama Crimson Tide are sitting there as the number one seed again. They were dead as a doornail a week ago and with no time on the clock against Auburn. If Auburn's running back doesn't run out of bounds, Alabama gets beat. They're not even in the playoffs. And now they're the number one seed and taking on the Cincinnati Bearcats, who have just done an unbelievable job. Alabama has the likely Heisman Trophy winner in Young, and they can do it all. But Auburn, did they expose anything with this team? Because they really did not look that good until that final drive against Auburn.
I think the big thing that if you're Cincinnati and you're Luke Fickell and you're looking for that takeaway, how can we make Alabama look like that? It's being able to create issues along the offensive line. basically outside of the Georgia game, this whole second half of the year has been kind of marred by their issues on the offensive line. And that's been a big reason why the offense hasn't looked the way that it looked when Mac Jones was there a year prior. And obviously there's a lot of roster turnover that goes into that. They had a lot of NFL guys up front that they're trying to, you know, retool around not having. So there's some there's a natural progression to that. But when I go and I watch Alabama and their loss against Texas A&M, obviously scuffling with Auburn until the absolute end, a lot of that has been brought about by the fact that they've just had issues setting up their protection. And even when they have their protection set up right, they've been losing a lot of their one-on-ones and protections. And that makes it difficult on an offense like that, that wants to get their backs involved. They like getting their tight ends involved. And when you're a team like Auburn and you know you can keep those kind of players in the box, having to add into the protection, you can play more man because there's less one-on-ones around the field, right? You can sit in those windows a little bit better. So if I'm Cincinnati and I watch the SEC championship game, the number one thing is we're probably not going to be better than Bryce Young. You can't beat Bryce Young. So don't beat Bryce Young, beat their protection. And that way you can get to him, right? You got to get to him before he gets to you. Just as Kirby Smart said in the SEC championship game, they got receivers that are faster, better, more talented than almost any DB in the country. So you're not just going to be able to rush four, drop seven and feel confident playing and play out. But if they can affect the pocket with their pressure, which is something that Cincinnati has been good at for basically the last 3 to 4 seasons, I think that they have reason to believe that they can at least cause enough problems to stay competitive with this team.
I think that Cincinnati has also done a good job creating tackles for loss on like first down in the run game. So if you can continue doing that and then set them up for longer situations, and then you got to tackle Bryce Young, period. Because this guy, when he gets out of the pocket, he's dominant. And that was really the difference in the Auburn game from the Auburn game to the Georgia game was Auburn was able to sack him, get him on the ground when they were getting these pressures. And then the Georgia game, A, there was less pressure because they did fix some of the issues they had on Alabama's offensive line. And then when they were pressuring, when they did pressure him, he gets out of the pocket or he makes a throw and, you know, with pressure around him. He's so good. You got to get him to the ground. And there's a chance. Look, Cincinnati's a big underdog for sure, but there's a chance because of what they do on defense that they can slow them down just a little bit, a chance.
Well, they've got to take away the big play, though. I mean, Bryce Young was 10 for 17, 283 yards and 3 touchdowns on throws beyond 10 yards downfield. So you can't let them do that, right? You can't give those great athletes they have playing receiver a chance to run all over you. But the PFF note that's come out of this whole thing is that right now Young is on pace for the highest grade that we've ever seen from a non-draft eligible quarterback in the PFF era. And we've seen some good ones. We've seen a lot of number one overall picks out of that quarterback position here lately. So is he that special? Are we thinking that he really is the next Trevor Lawrence that we're going to be talking about?
If he's not that exactly, he's right up there. I mean, and a lot of that has been his work against pressure when pockets aren't ideal. The ability, you know, and I saw this basically from week one, the ability to navigate the pocket and still push the ball down the field. What do we see all the time out of these draft eligible quarterbacks is that they come from these offenses where they're throwing a bunch of bubble screens, a bunch of hitches, ways to keep defenses spread out deep down the field and playing more vanilla. And as defenses have tried to get more aggressive with him, he's been able to respond to that aggression with aggression of his own. And that's carried them even while they've had these issues on the offensive line. So yes, I do think that we're probably looking at another one of those guys that is going to have that round one, pick one hype basically from the moment that spring football starts in 2022, you know, if not, you know, basically based on how he played in the SEC championship game and how I'm anticipating he's going to play throughout the playoff, it looks like that's going to be his spot to lose.
And I think I just want to say, I think there's a big difference between like a guy who deals with pressure the way Bryce Young does, because he's like maneuvering around players in the pocket, trying to keep his base and trying to keep his eyes downfield, versus a lot of guys who can have really good 1 year seasons, but these are the guys who see pressure and then bail out of the pocket. And then maybe they make a couple throws outside the pocket. It happens. But Bryce Young is creating these throws, kind of navigating inside the pocket, which I think probably bodes well for his future.
Yeah, let's go over to the other game now, Michigan and Georgia. Georgia had been the number one seed the entire season. Their defense was second to none. And then they got run out of the gym. I mean, there's just no other way to say it, playing against Alabama. And they're going against a Michigan defense whose defense may be just as good coming in. Aiden Hutchinson, obviously the guy that everybody talks about on the edge. But is this the game that where you now see that maybe Michigan should have been the number one overall seed after what they did to Ohio State and after what they did last week in the championship game?
I think they're the number one team. I don't think they're the best team. Like, I still would put Georgia and Alabama ahead of them, but I think their resume and what they've done this year tells me they're the number one team. I also understand that the play that they want to create these, the, you know, ESPN in the playoff wants to create certain matchups for the semifinals, so I'm okay with that. It's fun because you have Georgia, which is their strength is the interior of their defensive line, and you have Michigan and their strength, which is the exterior of the defensive line, their edge rushers. So it's just, I think it's just a super fun matchup. Think Georgia's the better team, but we've been underrating Michigan the whole season, so maybe I shouldn't be doing that anymore.
And I will say, you know, for as much as I agree with Seth that Georgia is probably the better team going from number one on the roster all the way down to number 100 or however big these college rosters are these days, they have the one thing that I think Georgia probably loses the most sleep over, and that's elite pass rush on both edges between Ojabo and Hutchinson. And if you're Michigan and you're looking at the way that they've been able to affect a guy like a CJ Stroud, who's another one of those quarterbacks that we're probably going to have conversations about being, you know, at the top of the draft next season, you've got to be looking at Stetson Bennett and saying, man, the way that you looked last week, I'm not sure if we end up in a situation where you're chasing a possession or two possessions and we've got to rely on your arm that you can get that done for us. So Michigan, I think, has a nice pathway or a reason to feel confident, even if they don't match up well across the board, that they have one of those game-breaking type of mismatches. And we see that in the NFL all the time, right? Elite offenses being stopped by great pass rushes. And I think that if you're Georgia, you've got to be thinking, we got to win on first down, handing the football off and staying in second and five, third and three, third and two. Because if it's third and nine and they get to just cut Hutchinson loose, you know, based on the way that Michigan has played against Ohio State, and the way they were able to create problems against them, and then obviously boat racing Iowa, that Georgia should feel like, hey, we can put up 35 points. Or if they're in a game where they need to put 35 points up against Michigan, I don't think they can feel confident that they can get that done against the way that Michigan's been playing so far this season.
Guys, it was really fun. I appreciate your time. We always have a good time. Two high safeties. What is your podcast again? What's it called?
It's just the Two High Podcast.
Two High Podcast. Now, we are talking about this Two High Safety look, and not just because you do the podcast the night after your party or anything like that.
No. It's a drug podcast. It is
a drug podcast? All right, that'll make people tune in even more.
There you go.
All right, if you want to listen to two drunks doing a podcast about football, Two High is the podcast for you. They're two of the best, Deontay Lee, Seth Galina. Guys, thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.